Welcome to the AI on Action podcast, the show where we break down the hype and highlight the practical benefits of data science, machine learning, and artificial intelligence on our everyday lives. To subscribe to the podcast, check us out on iTunes, SoundCloud, and any Android podcast of choice. Today's guest on the show is Paul Walsh. Paul is the founder of InSilico, the provider of the world's most easy-to-use data management and analytics software for the life sciences and healthcare industries. Paul is also director of Sigma Machine Learning Research Group at the Department of Computer Science in Cork IT. In today's fascinating episode, Paul will share how he became interested in science from an early age, the great research he's involved in with at Sigma, how to use data analytics to help make great breakthroughs in the healthcare sector. Later, Paul will discuss why he set up InSilico, projects they're working on, and also the importance of bringing a more personalized treatment for patients. We talk about research opportunities in agriculture, and later we'll get his thoughts on the potential of deep learning. You're listening to the AI in Action podcast, and I'm Mark Kelly. Let's get straight into the show. You're very welcome to the show, Paul.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Paul, let's talk straight into your background and tell us a little bit more about how you got interested in AI and machine learning.
I suppose if you go way back, as a child, I was always interested in science and, of course, science fiction. And I had the luck, I suppose, a very good neighbor of mine called Larry Poland. He's a well-known figure in the Cork tech community. He very kindly would have shown me some of the early Apple computers and the basis of programming along with my friends. And that really kind of lit a spark in me, I suppose. And I was always really into computing from that age. And I would have, as a teenager, I suppose like many people of my vintage, I would have typed in computer games from magazines, and then I would have learned to program the games myself. And I kind of grew more and more of an interest in computing. And I was always interested in science as well. So biology was a big interest of mine as a child and as a teenager. So I think that's important that's kind of recognized. And there's, you know, projects such as Coder Dojo, which I was involved with in some of the early days of kind of inspiring youngsters to kind of ignite their passion in whatever it is, whether it's computing or biology or whatnot. So I suppose that passion grew in me, and I went to university. I was lucky to go to University College Cork and studied there for a number of years, and I eventually got a PhD in machine learning. And I suppose in no small part due to, I suppose, the early interest that I had in it, but I also, interestingly, kind of was able to use my interest in biology in that, because the machine learning that I studied was kind of inspired by nature, such as neural networks and genetic algorithms. So I've done a lot in terms of, say, evolutionary computation, which is kind of inspired by Darwin's theory of evolution to try to generate solutions automatically for a whole wide range of problems. So and eventually then I kind of started working in academia and in industry as well.
I think it's fantastic that you can kind of pinpoint when you were younger, having that neighbor who kind of inspired you to kind of look into those Apple computers. You must have been the envy of all the other people in your class back in the day, because it can be so important to have somebody that's like a kind of a champion or a catalyst to kind of take you on the journey as well. So it's probably not by accident that you got involved in this and then kind of paid it forward with Coder Dojo as well, which is such a worthwhile endeavor too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Tell me about some of the Sigma research and commercial applications that have probably been most prevalent recently that would probably be good to share with our listeners.
Yeah. So I suppose one good example there is the intersection between, I suppose, academic research and industry. So Science Foundation Ireland have funded me on a project which is looking at the use of liquid biopsies, which I'll explain in more detail. But that's actually done in partnership with a German molecular diagnostics company. So this is, again, the intersection between academia and industry. So what we're aiming to do is try to advance the use of liquid biopsies, which are essentially blood or small fluid samples. And the benefit of a liquid biopsy is that you don't have to do any invasive surgery to get a sample from a patient. You just basically can go to your GP and get a blood sample. And one of the miracles recently in the whole biology world is the advent of sequencing technology, which has fallen in cost dramatically. So it's now possible to sequence a sample, say a blood sample from a patient, for really hundreds of dollars or less. And that can give you a huge amount of information as to what's going on in the patient. It's really very useful in terms of early detection of diseases. And in diseases such as cancer, the earlier that it's detected, the greater the success of the treatment. So that's a really important area there.
It's fascinating. Could you just tell us a little bit more about that? Because to say you could generate so much from just hundreds of dollars that can help detect cancer, which can massively increase the probability of living through something like that happening to you, how did that kind of come about?
Yeah, so I suppose the background to, the revolution in healthcare is sequencing, which has been in development, I suppose, since the 90s and earlier. So you might have heard of such as the Human Genome Project, where they aim to sequence. Yeah, so the miracle really of, I suppose, again, just talking about the intersection of government agencies and industry, that there's been a kind of a race, I suppose, between groups such as Craig Venter's to try and establish dominance in the sequencing technology, and that has really pushed the cost down dramatically. So it's gone from really, you know, millions of dollars down to hundreds of dollars in terms of the actual cost. So now even a small research lab can get a sequencing machine, which is about the size of a photocopier, and over a couple of hours it can take a tissue sample or a blood sample and produce literally terabytes of information as to what genetic data is in that sample.
It's incredible.
So, yeah, it is. I mean, like, every cell in the human body has, you know, over 3 billion base pairs. That data is constantly shifting and changing as the cells, you know, produce RNA and produce proteins. So there is huge opportunity for mining this data to get real insight into what's happening. Yeah. Say, for example, if you take a healthy cell, it has one signature, it has one profile. If you have a tumor cell, it has a completely different profile.
Yes.
What we aim to do is try and pick up that difference and detect disease early.
Which is brilliant. So from working within the Sigma Research Group, you then set up Insilico. Can you tell me a little bit about Insilico and what kind of motivated you to create it?
Sure, yeah. So Insilico is a spin-out with colleagues from the Cork Institute of Technology, and it is kind of, I suppose, translating the research I was just talking about, which is called bioinformatics research, trying to translate that into the real world. And a lot of biologists, physicians, drug companies, they all are facing real problems in terms of analyzing these huge data sets. So what Insilico has done is developed a range of tools, applications, and services that can help people in industry or people in care try to understand their particular data sets. So we would work with, you know, food companies, for example, and analyzing their products in terms of how they can improve the quality and production efficiency of their systems.
That's so exciting. So data science in healthcare, as we were speaking about it, is such a big game changer for the industry. Like, every time I'm looking at LinkedIn, I can see a new update about how oncologists are having augmented experience with machine learning, deep learning, and how it's becoming so much better for the end patient in terms of cancer detection, for example. Tell us a little bit about some of the other things that you're actually seeing coming down the line and the ultimate goal for Insilico.
Yeah, so I suppose another project that we're working on in Insilico is we have European Commission funding from Horizon 2020 to try to not only analyze the genomic data, but also integrate that data with the patient record. So you can imagine someone maybe in their 60s, they should have a long history of medical checkups, you know, even just their yearly GP checkup. They should have a long trail of records describing them individually. And of course, they also carry their own genetic data with them. So what we're trying to do is build two types of data sets, the genomic data set of the patient, but also their electronic record of their medical history. And the real magic happens when you can actually merge the two and try to personalize the treatment for patients. So we're working with Cork University Hospital and physicians there, Dr. Bill Bennett and Jason Kelly. We're trying to advance the information that we can give to them in real time. So when they're discussing patients, the patient may have a complication, they may have some unusual background, they may have a prior condition. So we're analyzing both the molecular diagnostics of their genomic profile, but also marrying that with their electronic records to give personalized suggestions and alerts. For example, one thing we can do quite easily is we can alert doctors to clinical trials that are running around the world that may suit particular patients, and that could be critical to the patient.
Yeah, I think it's incredible that you mentioned the word real time, because you'll be able to diagnose that. Because years ago, a patient might get some bad news and they'd have to wait several weeks, if not months, to come back and have a different course of action about where they could actually go and what need to do. To give that real time information of what clinical trials are happening at any one time, and to give people that hope and a journey, is so important, particularly on the mindset point of view, where if people feel like they've got clarity about what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, that can just take away so much worry. And worry, I'm sure, you, as you know, can really actually really increase the chance of getting further sick, and actually can really kind of make the whole family worry as well. So it really is incredible, that real-time nature, and how you can diagnose that and take advantage of all that data sets.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's all about trying to, even at a basic level, trying to streamline the efficiency of the service, of the health service, and also advance it. So sometimes machine learning, you know, is probably seen as the most advanced edge, but we can also develop even simple tools, like we've developed mobile applications for doctors that when they're with a patient and they want to make a judgment on ordering a test, they can do that straight away from our software. And even something as simple as that can take, you know, a lot of the, as you said, the waiting time and the stress away, even by accelerating it by even a few hours, but it can actually accelerate the whole treatment process, especially by days. If it's all streamlined and it's immediate and real time and mobile.
And also, Paul, what it also allows to do, and I'm sure you see this more than I do, is in the medical profession, so much frustration is vented because of their data entry, prescribing, doing things that don't necessarily are not productive in helping people's lives, and it causes burnout because they have to work so many hours just to try to catch up on so many different things. And being able to do that app within seconds can just free up so much of the doctor's time to actually focus on what's really, really important. And kind of deploying AI and applying it like that can just really make a difference to everybody in that ecosystem.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of hype about AI and machine learning, and AI can provide very advanced deep insight, but it also can automate the routine. So one thing we try to do is take away the routine tasks from people by automating them. And that's really, I think, where the low-hanging fruit for machine learning is to look at what's easily automated and try to hoover that up and make life a lot easier for people.
Yeah, and I think day to day, sometimes in the media, people can get fixated with robots taking over the world and all this different type of hype. But the automation of these things day to day, that will make such a big difference. And then if you look at those 1%, 2% efficiencies, they add up to so much money, so much time, that can just completely revolutionize. Tell me a little bit about the ultimate goal for InSilico, and tell me a little bit also about how you actually want to improve healthcare and life sciences further in the future.
I suppose the mission statement of InSilico is just really to put actionable information to the hands of those that need it. So if a doctor needs to make a judgment, make an assessment of a patient, that they have all the information they need to hand, and that we can filter and manage that information for them efficiently, so that, as you were saying earlier, that, you know, there's a lot of the burden is taken away from them. So we're already seeing big progress in that regard. Also, the genetic side as well is a huge area, which is, I suppose, it's maybe perhaps suffered from a little bit of hype, like a lot of these new technologies. But the ultimate goal is, like I was saying with liquid biopsies, is to provide really deep, precise, personalized analysis of a patient's actual physical condition with the least interferences possible. So we see something like liquid biopsies, which is a real hot topic at the moment, being where we can have major impact. We're also having, like I was saying as well, we're having impact in other areas as well, like even in food production. We have a project which is looking at food efficiency production in the dairy industry. And people might not know this, but the dairy industry is one of the big contributors to greenhouse gas, because when cows need to digest grass, a big byproduct is methane, which is produced by the microbes in the cattle's gut. So we're having great success already in terms of controlled studies. We're working with the Roslin Institute up in the Scottish Rural College, where we are able to get a control study and give cattle, herds of cattle, different diets and also different treatments, and we're able to analyze the microbes from those cattle gut samples, and we're able then to kind of determine what would be a good feeding strategy and a good supplement strategy to help reduce the effect of greenhouse gas in the cat, in the dairy industry, but also increase food production. So, you know, again, this is all derived from genomic analysis of the microbes in the cattle gut, and it's using, you know, I suppose big data, cloud computing, coupled with machine learning to give us the insight as to what actually is going on there.
It's fantastic. Every day I see new examples within agri-tech of the changes that we could make to everybody in society. It's so exciting, this area. Just one last question. I'm quite interested to see what your thoughts are on deep learning, obviously a subset of machine learning, because data sets grow, and there seems to be more of a kind of a focus on that. I'm not sure what you've seen in the market.
Yeah, I suppose, again, it all speaks to the hype. There is a lot of hype happening where, you know, there's demos of deep learning algorithms, analyzing videos, what have you. And indeed, you know, they are very powerful if used correctly, but there's a number of issues. So one is, as I said, the hype, that they can work well in controlled situations, but if even if a slight variation in the data is presented, they can suffer. Also, the explainability of deep learning, especially in regulated industries, if these technologies are used to make decisions, well, how do we know how the algorithm came to make the decision? So that's another big area. So we're doing some work in machine vision ourselves, and maybe pass on some of the videos where you can use both deep learning or technology, even simpler technologies such as support vector machines, which are machine learning tools that can learn to pick up patterns in the data. So if you give the algorithm enough data, it learns to pick up patterns. So we have a project called SenseCare, another European project, where we're detecting distress in elderly people, and I can send on some videos showing how that works.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
It works really amazingly well, but again, it's making potentially very serious judgments, and we need to be able to ensure that it's accurate and it's valid as well. So, like I was saying earlier, it's very important that these solutions are validated with people. But again, going back to your question, this was deep learning. There are issues. There's a lot of hype, but absolutely, if the systems are engineered well and they're architected well, they can certainly automate routine tasks and have a big impact. But I think we're way off having our robot overlords won't overthrow us just yet.
Yes. So, I think that, as you said, the key point is the decision logic, because we want to understand how something actually makes a decision, because if we don't understand that, then we don't know consistently what decision they're going to make or how they actually came to terms with that, kind of similar to the brain in some cases. Paul, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Not at all, Mark. Thanks very much.
That's all for this episode of AI in Action. Hope you really enjoyed it. If you'd like to stay updated with all the latest podcasts, then please head over to the website aiinaction.ie and subscribe to the newsletter to get the podcast delivered straight to your inbox. Finally, I'd like to take the time to let you know about the AI Awards. We're now looking for applications from academia and industry professionals to apply. Set up in 2018, the AI Awards are a not-for-profit business, community-led initiative that was set up to celebrate the best in artificial intelligence and data science in Ireland. Our focus is to support the AI community by recognising the hard work and dedication of those working in the field of AI, data science and machine learning. We see this as a fantastic opportunity to showcase your work and skills to the AI community on the island of Ireland, and also help raise the profile of Ireland as a destination for AI investment. Winning an award brings industry-wide recognition, raises your company profile, and increases awareness of your brand and product. Applications take only a couple of minutes, so go ahead, apply today at www.aiawards.ie. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you again next week.